Welcome to the third Peak Performance Podcast Visual Edition. Today's special guest is a good friend of mine, Mr. Darren Gray. So, Darren, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Special. I feel special. The only people that call me that are my daughters and my wife, but they're obliged to. So, I genuinely feel special. Thank you. Thank you for having me. No problem.
So, yeah, Darren is the owner of Fit, Fun and Active. So Darren, do you want to tell my listeners a little bit about yourself?
So as you said, I happen to be, you know, the owner and the founder of Fit, Fun, Active.
What is Fit, Fun and Active? Just want to talk.
Sure. So Fit, Fun, Active is a movement. It's a fitness movement. We provide fitness. Different aspects of fitness to a number of people over mainly South London. So from boot camps to running courses, Capture to 5K running courses. We've got some classes, some online classes. So we've got boxing class, we've got a strength online class as a result of the pandemic, and personal training and small group personal training. So yeah, we're a fitness provider to a number of people across South London. Yeah.
Brilliant. So how long have you been doing that?
Well, Fit, Fun, Active itself, I launched Fit, Fun, Active in 2013. Yeah, a couple of years, just after my daughter was born. And but fitness itself, I've been doing fitness for years. Yeah. My first class was in 1999, I believe.
Wow.
If I've done my math correct. Yeah, we're in 2021 now. So yeah, just over 22 years ago. I've been doing fitness for a very long time.
Wow.
So I'm fortunate to know a little bit about exercise, coaching and various aspects of teaching.
Brilliant, yeah. Brilliant. So my next question is, how the hell did you get into, you know, the whole exercise and fitness game?
Well, it's I don't know if it's an interesting story for your listeners, but it's an interesting story in my head. I was quite fortunate that I was always active. I was always active, and was involved in various elements of sport, mainly from a young age, football. Tennis, basketball, running away from certain troublemakers. But it involved activity because those that would get, you know, would get into trouble were the ones that weren't so active. Most of the time. But no, I jest. Specifically in terms of coaching, I was doing a sports science course. At college, and one of the modules was circuit training, looking at different aspects of designing circuits, program writing, and the course leader at the time knew somebody in the local leisure center, and she got in touch with this guy. Sunny, his name was. I remember he was quite a poignant figure in terms of me getting into yeah. fitness. And he invited us all down to come and see the circuits. So it's one thing learning to deliver programs and designing programs, and there's another thing seeing it in place. And he had this really big circuit class in a leisure centre known as Westcroft Leisure Centre. I don't know if you know. It's in Carshalton or Carshalton Beaches.
Yeah.
And so we went down to see this circuit class, and up until then we'd just learned. You know, you do crunches like this, and you know, you got your 10 stations around.
Yeah.
And we'd only seen it on paper. And in this particular circuit, it was a really big hall, probably the size of a five-a-side football pitch. And then there was a divider. I don't know if these leisure centers now still have the divider. So you'll have one pitch that side, one pitch this side, an indoor leisure center. And they'd have to remove the divider. So if you can imagine the size of two five-a-side football pitches, yeah. And he'd take up the entire area of two football five-a-side football pitches and then have his circuits dotted around. And we came down to see circuits in action. So it was a good introduction. And I looked and I remember thinking, wow. And at the end of the class, he did a question and answer. And we had some questions for him. He answered. And I remember him finishing. He said, I've got a question. I'm looking for some assistance, but it would be on a voluntary basis. If any of you are interested, please let your tutor know, and she'll let you know. And most of the my peers at the time was just like, nah, voluntary, nah, I'm not gonna get paid for getting that. I wanna earn some pocket money.
Yeah.
Because I thought, you know what, it would just be interesting to go down and see it. So I did just that. I went down and I thought I was just gonna come and sit at the back and perhaps just, I don't know, hold the door open because there were so many people.
Yeah, yeah.
So much so, there was about 80 people. I know it wasn't about because they capped it at 80. Mm-hmm. Imagine being in a class and you're in charge of making 80 people feel energized, helping them work towards a fitness. And I thought, yeah, this is nice. I felt out of my element just helping.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's good though.
Yeah. And he then said to me, do you know what? I'm looking for, you know, assistant. Why don't you go and get qualified? And so that's exactly what happened. I went to go and get qualified, and that was it. I started assisting, and then eventually started taking over. Unfortunately for them, I was delivering the class quite soon after having been qualified. Wow. Yeah. So that was the beginning for me, and what a beginning. It had a massive impact.
Yeah.
I'm still doing it now. It. 22 years ago was my first class, and I'm still delivering exercise now.
Wow, that's brilliant, because that kind of touches on something that I was going to ask you,
right.
And you've kind of answered it already, but I'm still going to ask you anyway. But the reason why I really wanted to get you down here and have this conversation with you is because, like, I meet a lot of people, as you do, within the fitness industry. I see maybe like 6 or 7 clients on a daily basis, and I speak to them. And a lot of my clients I connect with. And when I met you, I felt that I connected with you, and I felt that we were like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that struck me was when you popped me a message, you said, oh yeah, I saw you in Southwark Park. Why don't you come down and just, you know, train a couple of your clients at Fit Fun Active?
Okay.
And if I'm honest with you, my first thing was, what does this guy want? Like, what does he want from me? Like,
oh, so now you talk.
But so but when I came down, it was the complete opposite. Right. It was like, just use some of the facilities and let's learn from each other.
Yeah.
And like I said, the world we kind of live in now, sometimes we're kind of suspicious of, but it was nice to meet someone who is like myself, who will give and not necessarily want an instant return.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, you know what? You don't meet many people on that level, because some people, they will give with one hand and then take away with another.
Yeah, and for that reason, I can understand. I mean, to be honest, Richard, I have been in contact with a number of people. I am careful with, you know, who absolutely. Yeah. Sort of, you know, people nowadays, they click a few buttons and they follow. No, I'm in an anorak with a newspaper, looking, really following people. That are really, I'm not really, but yeah, no, you know, I take my time and
you
know, I do a bit of jogging, and when I jog, it's not just a case of just heading to any destination. I'm going from park to park, and I'm trying to go at the peak hour when we have clients.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And in the morning, about 7, if you're a trainer for any length of time, you start to understand about 7 a.m. is normally the sweet spot for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And the same for the evening. All right, if your timetable is busy, normally it's quite hard to, you know, to give any new customer a 7 a.m. slot
or 7 p.m. slot, right? Yeah.
And I kind of got this particular client I've been working with for about 9 years, because it was just after my daughter was born, and she's 10 now. And we started working together. We're still working together now. She has a 7 a.m. slot, and she would just not let go of it
for
love or money. She'd not let go of it. And I don't want her particularly to, but there's no negotiations. That's it. But if ever I do have a free moment and I fit my jogging in around that time, I will go around and look and try to, you know, meet more people, because I didn't say much, but that is something else I'm interested in doing. I don't know if I'm doing it, but that providing of fitness, I want to be able to be in a space where I'm rubbing shoulders with other people who are providing something similar. because then hopefully I can provide more. And so I understand that apprehension. You know, what does this guy want? Yeah. I contact people.
Yeah.
And a number of people, you know, I don't hear from, but yeah. I'm not afraid of a no.
Yeah.
And so I'll just continue to contact more people and hope that, you know, we can make these relationships that can eventually make that provision greater.
Yes. Yes. And that for me is what kind of touched me, because like going back to what I said I was going to ask you previously is what kind of, I don't know what the word I'm trying to find is, but what made you have that growth mindset? What taught you to not look for the instant gratification and to think, you know what, let me go in this for the long term? Was there any particular thing that happened or any occurrence in your life that kind of switched your thinking from perhaps short term to a longer term strategy?
Sure. I don't know if I do. Do you just have it? Well, I don't know. I'll tell you that you do.
So certainly
I'm not doing. Okay, I'm a long way from where I was. There's a long way to go.
Yeah.
But certainly we're a long way from where he was. And those aren't my words. It's my good colleague Altes Kezu, for which we've been working together for, gosh, 13 years maybe. Maybe 12 years, and I remember him. It was a post, in fact. He put, "We're not where we want to be, or we're a long way from where we want to be, but we're certainly a long way from where we was."
Yes.
So yeah, we've grown, and that growth mindset. I think if I think back personally, because I have had a lot of good help from colleagues for which I've contacted or for which I've got in touch, and we've been providing more and more, so yeah, to some extent we're growing. I think growing up, I was made to wait. I was made to wait.
thank you.
Yeah, no, I was made thank to wait growing you. Up I was made to wait. Now it's an interesting one, because you know, it's that instant gratification, I think, that wasn't a choice. And I also heard, and I can't remember where I heard it, that poverty, and we weren't poor, I don't think we were, because we were rich in other ways.
Yes.
But maybe financially at certain times we were.
Yes.
Because myself and or my sister and I, we were making handmade burgers whilst my mum was on her way to her second job. And I think at the time my sister was about 9, so that makes me 7. But maybe I was just watching her make the burgers, and I'm making this up. But I know that we had times when we didn't have the luxury of certain things. And you know, this thing that I heard, money doesn't, you know, make things better. Money doesn't make you rich or make you happy unless you come from poverty. Because then it makes you appreciate it more, and it can ultimately. And it was more poetic than that, because we all know people that got lots of money, but they're not happy.
Yes.
We all know that. But then equally, we know people who got lots of money who are happy. So it's not the money that makes you happy. And I think that when you don't have choice and you are thrown into a situation where you have to wait, when you do get money, and I mean, you know, again, I'm far from where I was, you then start to say, okay, well, I can buy another pair of trainers. Although the laces, they can't see, but although the laces on these trainers, as you can see, they're busted, but I've got a choice. They're comfortable enough. I don't have to go.
Yeah.
So when you do that, you kind of appreciate them, the money more. And so I think that it's that kind of beginning and an attachment to things which are much more than money. So money's never the drive. If keeping that growth mindset, as you say, it's because it's that desire to move the goalposts all the time rather than making money. So I don't, you know.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely spot on, because I can relate to that so much, because when I was younger, I didn't have the option of instant gratification. So I had to learn patience. Mm. And what I learned at an early age is that you get more from the process than you do from the actual outcome.
Yeah.
So even with my clients now, when I'm trying to, you know, teach them about, you know, how I want them to make exercise become habitual, and I want them to make eating good food become habitual, they may have slip ups and trips and blips, but they learn a lot more from the whole process than they do from when they get to their target goal or target weight or target shape.
Yeah.
The process has taught them more. And I'm proud to see that rather than someone get from A to B quick and not instantly pick up the lessons along the way.
So if there's something in there, I think it's patience, which seems to be the operative, you know, ideology behind growth. Because if you can become, as you say, you know, you're working towards that goal, it's the person they're becoming in the process.
And I think that's one of the most important things is what you become whilst you're on your journey.
Mm.
You know, because even for me myself, one thing that I'm proud of is that I don't just read from a textbook when I'm delivering packages or plans or dietary advice to my clients. I've actually lived it.
Mm.
So yeah, I did do the qualifications. So I do have the qualifications, but on the back of that, I do have the actual, the blood, sweat and tears to prove that, like, I know what I'm talking about, you know? And I think that it's really important because I've known people who like see what I do sometimes, and one particular person, and they were like, oh, I want to become a personal trainer. Yeah. And they were like doing these crazy numbers. Like, if I get 10 clients, I charge them this amount, and I do this, I'll have this amount of money. And I remember listening to them talk, and they were just focused on the money.
Mm.
And I was thinking to myself, it's not going to work.
You know, sadly, I mean, I know so many personal examples of people whom have been driven by money over the years. And every time I have this kind of discussion, people in a financial background, you know, I've got a very good auntie who retired at 50, you know, modest beginnings, the same kind of modest beginnings that you know, many family members would have had, but she made some choices with her money. She happened to be a regional bank manager, worked for HSBC for many, many, many years. In fact, that was the only company she worked for, just different roles within that. So she's always been good with money, but she made those choices with regards to the end goal. It wasn't how much money am I going to make, it's how can, so, you know, there's nothing wrong with money, and I know that's not what you're saying, but it's just that how much money am I going to make, how much money am I going to make?
That's the focal.
Yeah, and over the years, I've seen that people who have that, just, they don't seem to be, it even doesn't last. They go and do something else. They end up unhealthy. If it's not physically, it's mentally.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that's everybody. And I'm, again, because I don't want to be misquoted, it's not a case of money being bad or anything, wanting to, you know,
earn money. Yeah, not
absolutely.
Yeah.
And let your money grow. It's just that, you know, money is a fallacy, like most things. Nothing means anything unless the meaning you give it. It doesn't mean anything. So it's the person you become. And I think that, you know, when your morals are centered around something more than money, for just speaking personally, those, and only, you know, a real small, what's the word, cohort of people, I can't speak for everybody, those people who have a focus on more than money seems to maintain
a real sense of growth. 100%. And I think that just speaking from my own perspective, I know certainly from some kind of yours, because I see how you interact with some of your clients, but your clients can feel your energy. Your clients can feel that you care.
Mm.
Your clients can feel that it's not about money. It's about delivering a service that's going to benefit them. And a byproduct of that service is you get paid.
Yeah, they still know that. You know, when September comes around, I've got some new school shoes to buy. So,
But
I think I'm fortunate to have a huge percentage of my daily timetable with people that I've been working with for more than 6 years, 10 years. You know, I can probably name you 6 or 7 people for whom I've worked with once a week, every week, except for holidays and special celebrations. Mm-hmm. For 10 years straight, non-stop. Yeah.
And you're
and I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
And really fortunate.
You were saying to me before that you have a client that travels from quite far to see you.
Yeah, I mean, that's only because there's nowhere else to go to be to. No, I mean, yeah, we've been together for a long time, and yeah, that's right. They come from Sanderstead, Shirley Way, in fact,
yeah.
Over to Deptford once a week, and then there's another lady who comes from Beckenham over to see us,
yeah.
in Deptford, which is about nine or ten miles.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So along the way, this journey of setting up Fit, Fun and Active,
mm-hmm.
Has there been any obstacles that you've had to overcome?
Obstacles. I mean, every day there's obstacles. You know, every day there's obstacles. I mean, trying to get enough sleep sometimes is
an obstacle. Yeah.
Especially when my wife snores.
No.
She doesn't really. I do. So. I'm kicked out of the bed, so seriously, trying to get enough sleep, trying to remember to take my vitamins, and whether I've actually taken one is an obstacle. But no, there's obstacles all the time. I mean, recently, and we're still going through it, the pandemic.
Yes, that's what
kind of coronavirus.
Yeah.
But even that means different things for different people. So it's all very well saying this is the obstacle, but that obstacle is multifaceted. There's so many elements to it that means that you kind of continually changing your
model.
Mm. Which I'm almost apprehensive to mention, because the idea that you've even got a model, I'm not sure that we do. What we're doing is we're moving. That's why at the beginning you know, it's a fitness movement, and we're constantly adapting. When asked, you know, about obstacles, that's how I like to describe it, because we are in motion. Ultimately.
Yeah. Because even for myself, before the lockdown, I didn't really have like an online presence in terms of how I was training or meeting clients. So very much like I turn up, they turn up and we meet.
Yeah.
And one of the positives that I've taken out of this whole pandemic and this whole situation was that I was able to then, you know, learn about Zoom, learn about Teams, and just adapt and pivot and make sure that I could still deliver a high quality service.
Yeah.
Even though we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah. I must say our online provisions were accelerated by the pandemic. It was an interesting time because so many discussions were, as you can potentially imagine, difficult.
Yes.
When people would ask during that time, I say during that time as if we're out of it. We're certainly not in a lockdown at the moment, and it's been a while since we've been in a lockdown.
Yeah.
But people would say, how's things? And you'd have to kind of return the question, because it's almost as if my answer at the time wasn't the popular answer, because in terms of how things, I felt like, well, great, it's never been better.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But I knew that for many people that wasn't the case. And I'm not taking away from the any atrocities that did happen. There were difficult times, real time.
Yeah.
I mean, even we had difficult times. I lost some colleagues at the time with respect to them not working with us. When I say lost, gotta be careful, because they're still here.
Yeah.
It's just that they decided to move on and do other things. But the reality is that there are people, or we will know people that genuinely aren't here, sadly. And so it was a difficult time. But in terms of our online provisions, we launched into exclusively delivering personal training, group exercise, all online. And slowly, as we've come back to normality, as it were, we've been able to fortunately keep various aspects, when I know that a number of people who have gone back to normal haven't. Some have.
Yeah.
But many haven't. That was then, and now they've gone back to, that wasn't for us. We launched into some group exercise. Yes, we've reopened the gym, gone back to boot camp in Streatham, delivering the running courses in Broccoli, but we've also maintained some of our weekly online classes, be it strength and HIIT.
Yes. And it's the same with me. Like, I'm in a blessed position now that it's come up to Christmas, and quite a few of my clients are going to see their parents in Devon, or one of my clients is going back to Austria, and I can still train them.
Mm.
you know, which is a beautiful thing. Like I trained a group of people today, work for a certain company, and via Zoom,
right.
Like everyone in the you know, exercise area of their building,
yeah.
And I could train them. And pre-pandemic, I probably wouldn't have even thought that I could expand my class
right.
to colleagues, because yeah. I was just training the one yeah. person.
So I'll give you the way I see things, back coming back to what you're saying in terms of kind of growth mindset, patience versus instant gratification. I think there will be a cohort of trainers that when that opportunity online came, fantastic, and you know, they galvanized, and rightly so, we should all try to kind of seek out the opportunity rather than the difficulty.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, some just took a break during that time and felt that it's just not what they want to do. If I'm honest, it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I wanted to stay in the gym.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes you have to move, you have to be flexible, coming back to being in a movement. And now that we have gone back to gyms and parks and so on, it's almost as if that was then and they've moved on. But I think those that have more in terms of the bigger picture, as you put it, would have said, okay, this is more than just I'm going to do this now. How can I make this a new component of the business or the way in which I'm operating? So it's thinking bigger and it's saying, okay, I knew about online exercise and, you know, I procrastinated or I didn't want to do it, but I've got no choice now. How can I deliver this and use this opportunity to not only provide a service for my clients now, but open something that could possibly provide them something forever, but then me the freedom to deliver classes at Christmas while my clients are in Devon?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, like, for a lot of people, and like I said, I've got clients who work in the city. I've got clients who are, you know, do various different jobs. And one thing that I'm kind of happy is that a lot of them stretch themselves during that period of time,
mm-hmm.
and they can't go back now. So their mind is almost like a muscle. You work in a muscle, and it just gets stronger and stronger. And I think that a lot of my clients, their mindset has been stretched and it can't go back down now. So now they're looking for ways to continue to better themselves and to stretch themselves, which is, I think it's a great thing, because as you know, the famous saying is that nothing grows in the comfort zone. I think
that's right.
A lot of the time, if we don't try to stretch ourselves, we will stay the same.
Exactly. No, exactly.
And I think it's important just to, really try to stretch ourselves and, Keep learning. Mm-hmm. Keep pushing yourself to strive to more better things, really. So, what lessons have you picked up, really, yourself over the last, say, 12 months? Any learnings that you can share with the listeners?
Yeah, I think, you know, the lessons are quite consistent. The lessons are quite consistent and have been for a long time. I think the idea of wanting to do more than just earn some money, the idea of wanting to reach more people, I've been exposed to, because the potential online, for example, there's no reason why you can't deliver the class rather than to 4 people, to 40 people, or to 80. And it's connecting to that potential. It doesn't necessarily have to be the drive to get to 40 or 80, but that is the potential, connecting to the potential. So whilst it's 4, and the idea of potentially reaching 40, the lesson is to, first of all, look for 6 and then 8.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I've learned in a big way in the last year. Looking at the big picture, as you mentioned a couple of times, but also keeping an eye on where are the goalposts and being realistic. Because I think when you can be realistic, you can manage your expectations.
Yeah.
But not only expectations, Richard, but you can maintain, you can hang on to your soul. Do you know the idea of chasing something? And you chase it so much and you lose yourself. Like you lose your dignity, your soul, your respect.
Yeah.
I mean, how good will you be if you get there and you look back and there's no one with you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think if you can look at where you are and have that short-term goal, that's why I think the last 12 years has done even more. It's often been, I don't know where it came from, it's often been a goal to, a lesson, if you like, mm-hmm. in terms of business, to just look at the next step, but have an eye on the potential.
Yeah.
The potential is endless. It doesn't have to be 40 or 60. It can just be 5,000. But it's that is there, but it's not the drive. It's about... looking after what you've got and move and shift in that a little bit. So those are the lessons.
Brilliant, man. Yeah. In terms of like motivation and stuff like that, is there anything, like, I know we're not in this game for we self-motivate ourselves, is kind of what I'm trying to say, but is there any motivations that you have that kind of keeps you on track and keeps you focused?
Just being totally oblivious, actually. Burying my head in the sand. Honestly. No, I say that tongue in cheek. I think much of the discoveries sometimes go from just throw myself at something and then being fully committed and thinking, well, where do I go from here? Because I'm already committed now.
Mm-hmm.
Not loosely. I'll do that in things I feel competent. I mean, I wouldn't just go and, right, there we go, there's a hairdressing salon, let me take it over.
It's
not that sort of guesswork.
Yeah.
If there is an element of guesswork, it will often be health and fitness related. It will be moving 4 to 6. It will be going from circuits to hit or whatever. So, but once it makes sense, going for it and not trying to. So, I don't know, the idea that you can do that just tends to keep me motivated, really. I don't really have anything specific that keeps me personally motivated. Yeah. But I do understand the idea of an internal locus of control.
Yes. Because even for me myself now, it's like I'm not running away from my past.
Mm.
I'm looking forward to my future.
Mm.
So I'm always having that kind of towards strategy where I'm thinking, okay, how much more people can I help? How much, how fortunate is person X, Y, and Z going to be if they get to work with me?
Yeah.
Let me make sure that I put myself out there so that I'm vibrating on the right frequency so that I meet people who are vibrating on the same frequency as me. And that's how I think that it's going to sound a bit airy-fairy, but I think that I don't meet people by accident.
Mm.
I think that we're vibrating at a certain frequency and then we meet each other.
Mm.
And then good things happen and I'm able to learn, I'm able to motivate, and I'm able to also get lessons from the other person to better myself.
Yeah.
So, it's all about, for me, making sure that my health is on point, making sure my mental health is on point, so I'm vibrating at the right frequency so that I can continue to deliver the level of service and energy so that I can help more people. And that motivates me.
Mm.
Also, I have, same as you, children, I have to make sure that they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that motivates me as well.
It definitely, my biggest motivation.
Yeah.
From day to day, the idea of finishing a certain number of components to your day to make sure that you're motivated to leave on time so that you're not late for pickup.
Is
a motivation. They are huge motivation for sure in terms of extrinsic motivation.
Yeah.
But in intrinsic motivation, internal locus of control, and just kind of the desire to want to run towards the future, which might be an hour's time, it might be tomorrow, it might be next year, and that's where I'm coming from, that's where I'm coming from at this moment in time, with people not so connected to a positive mental state, you know, things being out of balance. I think even more so now, it's important to look at where we are, but keep one eye. I think so many people are just running towards that future, but running past their children, or running towards that future and running past the unpaid bill. You see, they're running towards £1,000, but that bill's going to accumulate to £2,000. I mean, I know that sounds a bit arbitrary, but that is it. It's about taking care and, you know, just...
I love the way you put that. It's brilliant. Yeah. So talking about motivation, what strategies or what ways do you use to motivate your clients? Is there anything you do in particular? Is there any examples you can give me of clients where you've had to take them from A and get them to Z, and what you've done in between? You know,
I can give you an example from today. I just started with a lady. We have done 10 sessions, although there's another guy I've done 10 years. And I said to her that I just don't think that I've got the tools to help you, because I've got a fair bit of experience to help you with related to health related exercise. But ultimately, you've got to make the decision. So I offered her a refund.
Wow.
I'm not suggesting that that's the approach that I take with everybody, but it's about connecting to the idea that what I want to do is to help her.
Yes.
And we had a long discussion about it. As it happens, she's gone ahead and rebooked for next week. So we're booked in for Monday, despite starting the hour with offering a refund and giving back the remaining money for the sessions. And where it came from was this idea that making a decision is very different to being interested. Making a decision is very different to being interested. And so I think one of the things in terms of strategies, I like the psychosocial side of things. So in terms of strategies, I take time to connect with what behaviors or what can they put into place to help them to continue to attend. Let's start with attendance.
The
goal might be to lose weight. The goal might be to get ready for a half marathon, whatever. But you got to start with attendance. And if you can attend, then that's half the job. And if we have a discussion now with lots of people, most people, and these could just be random strangers, we can pop outside, go to a coffee shop, sit down and just see who comes in and start a discussion with people that have just come into the coffee shop and ask them their opinions on health related exercise. And to some extent, everyone's going to be interested. They're going to want to have something to add to the discussion. I doubt that many people say, forget your exercise stuff. I don't need any improvements in health and fitness, because we can all improve.
Yes.
That's the idea. And with that, then people are all interested on some level.
Yeah.
And if we offer them the opportunity to come and do some exercise or even improve their health and fitness, some people say, you're going to start that next week. I'm going to be there. You know, it's like,
I'm going to be there.
It might be your auntie. It might be someone you just saw in the coffee shop. Yeah, it might be someone that you've known for 3 years. And for the last 3 years, they're going to be there, but they're still not there.
You're not
striking those conversations. Yeah. And I think the tricky thing we have being in the fitness industry is that most people are interested in improving their health.
Yeah.
So it's tricky. And so now I'm interested in terms of strategies. Now I'm interested in what gets people to behave the way they do or the way that we perceive will be best for them. Most people then will agree that attendance is the start.
Yes.
So how can we get them just to attend? And so in terms of strategies, I'm trying to look at where are they in terms of how ready are they? Because at the moment they're presented as somebody's ready because they just said, I'm going to be there next week. I'm going to be there. So we're saying, okay, if we take everybody who says they're going to be there and we put our house on it, and then we'd be out of it. We'd be living in the street.
Yes.
If we went on everybody's word, because I said I'm going to be here today. And if we went on everybody's word who says they're going to be there at our classes, we'd be on the street.
Yeah.
In fact, if you could take a pound away from me, from the number of people who said, I would be poor. I'd be making burgers. And this time, I'm making them on my own because my sister's in America.
Exactly.
And and in trying to figure out, okay, well, where are they? I've come across a model for behavior change, which is the trans-theoretical model for behavior change, or the stages of readiness.
You're familiar, right?
And trying to interpret that and looking. And so this lady, it might seem a bit harsh to your listeners, you know, she's come to seek out your services and you're offering her a refund. It's not because I don't want to work with her. It's about getting this right from the beginning. I'm not sure if she's ready according to the stages on the trans-theoretical model for behavior change. She might be in contemplation rather than preparation, or even action.
Yeah.
Because can I help her to process or to transition into action? Well, maybe the discussion we had this morning, maybe a helping hand. So those are some of the strategies.
That's absolutely brilliant, because a few times I've had to kind of go down that same route of actually saying to people, like, you know what? What I want you to do is I want you to come back when you're 100% ready. So just
it's go. Not nice.
Yeah, it's not nice, but I think they'll respect it more, because I don't want to train someone who's going to give it 50%. Like, who will come and, you know, can we not do today? Can we do, you know what, sorry, can we do this? Mm. And then, you know, you see them on Instagram and they're like, out with drinks and stuff, and they're being committed.
Or an Easter bunny in this hand at Easter, and then a box of Maltese over here. This. You think, okay, we're not saying, you know, don't enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
But look at the energy that you're attracting. Then the same cousin of yours or friend that sees that, and let's go out for burgers, and rather than holding your trainers up, and perhaps your neighbor says, no, you're running, they said, right, let's go out for a run.
Yes,
you see,
so yes, and I think that's so important, because, you know, just to slightly digress, is that, like, they say that you are who you most you know, hang around with, or if you look at the last conversations in your phone book, they're the people who you're most like as well.
Hold on, let me see.
So I think it's so important, because there's even been times when I know people think that as a PT, you always want to exercise and you're always ready to go. But there's been times I tell you that I've gone to the gym and I've been like, oh my God, I'm so tired, man. I'd rather just bypass the treadmill or the weights, and I'll just go straight into the sauna and steam. But I can't do that because I can't cheat myself. And I know after I did do that, I would feel like crap because I haven't earned the sauna and steam. Mm. But anyway, I digress. So I do have some conversations in my head sometimes just to be like, Richard, you know what? It's all right for you to have that sort of negotiation in your mind, but ultimately you're going to work out. Mm. And I just...
Do you see what you've done though, Richard? Because you're not just interested in health and fitness, you're not interested in working out. You've made a decision. Because Tony Robbins says that decision comes from the Latin word incision. An incision is to cut, right? So to cut off from. If you've made the decision versus just being interested, everyone's interested.
Yeah.
Then you cut off from all other possibilities. You don't post on Instagram going like this, you know? Yeah. Instead, we all have a drink. Many people have a drink.
Yeah, right? I have a drink.
Right. But we're not saying that we don't feel tired, but it's the idea that you've cut off from all other possibilities, even if you just go and do that 20 minutes or whatever. So you're committed. Commitment and interest is two different things.
Yes.
And you're wanting to be at a place with all your clients, perhaps, that you want them to, before they come, they're going to have off days. You're okay with that.
Yeah.
We're all okay with that as trainers. But turn up, which is what I'm saying. Exercise adherence has to be the first stage. And if they can turn up, then... okay, you're showing that level of commitment. What we're not asking them to do is, right, that's it, intermittent fasting every day.
Yeah.
You're allowed to eat between 2 and 6 and that's it. You know, that's not what we're saying about commitment. What we're saying is, are you interested or are you committed?
Yeah.
Because if you're committed, you're not going to come tomorrow, 10 minutes into your session, and say you haven't done your food diary, or say you were at the Christmas thing and you had 10 pints of beer, which is fine if your goal isn't weight loss.
Yeah.
But have a little drink and get ready. Or let's shift your training session. Don't book it in for tomorrow and the day after. But you see, you're cutting off from the possibility of a cancellation.
Yeah.
By saying, next week I've got this, can we change it to this day?
Exactly.
You're being proactive.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's the thing. I think commitment and interest is you know what we're trying to hone in on when we're looking at, you know, the strategies that we're putting forward
for clients. And I think it's really important what you just said, because it's really important to highlight that everyone has these moments when they feel like, oh, I don't want to train, or I don't want to exercise, or I'd rather be in bed. We all have those moments. But like you said, it's all the ability to be disciplined and almost kind of cut off any other option but to turn up. And like you said, the very basic thing is to turn up.
Mm.
And as long as you can turn up, then we can work with you.
Mm.
And then we can go on to more complicated stuff like macros and portion control and stuff like that. But the very basic thing is just to turn up. Once you turn up on time, put your work in, then we can then progress to, okay, now let's have a look at your diet. Okay, let's have a look at your sleeping patterns. Okay, let's have a look at your stress levels. Just look at how much alcohol you consume. Let's look, and there's other things that you can tweak to make the workout more enjoyable.
Of course, and we all agree that exercise and nutrition and all these other aspects that you mentioned, such as sleep, are key pillars towards most health and fitness goals, whether that's an aesthetic one or a performance one.
Yeah.
Of course, peak performance. then absolutely, we'd all agree, wow, we can't do any of that until we look at some of those other psychosocial behaviors, you see, that are impeding that goal.
Yeah.
And you know, the truth is this, if we were to search online now, Richard, and we were to type in how to lose weight or how to improve my VO2 max, okay, for your listeners, that is just the oxygen capacity, a measure of oxygen capacity, which is correlated to your performance within endurance exercise.
Yeah.
We'd find a number of key parameters which will look at how much to eat or how much exercise you should do, what type of exercise, what type of food, and so on. And they will be related to nutrition and exercise. And of course, again, those are important. But very little, if any, attention is paid to psychosocial behaviors.
Mm.
Now, the thing is, if eat less, move more was as basic as the euphemism suggests, then we're all being great.
And we wouldn't have a job.
We wouldn't have a job. But yet, okay, fine. Coronavirus is the pandemic. But obesity is an ongoing epidemic beyond coronavirus. Once this is done, if it's ever done, because we'll probably be living with this forever, obesity is an ongoing epidemic. And so if it was as black and white as eat less, move more, then we will be in great shape.
Yeah.
It isn't. It simply isn't.
Yes.
And so that is why that's a real interest for me. Psychosocial behavior. Gaining a six pack and that drive is less important now.
Yes.
It's now going back down to basics and say just trying to help more people to turn up.
Yeah.
Seems to give a real buzz when you can influence behavior.
Yeah, because
positively.
Yeah, one thing that I'm always trying to do is trying to almost sometimes use a carrot. So I'm always trying to tell clients, like, look at yourself 12 months down the line.
Right.
Where do you want to be? What do you want to achieve?
Mm-hmm.
And then working it backwards and using bite-sized chunks to make them see, okay, so if I'm going to reach X, Y, Z in 12 months, month one, I need to have actually achieved this. Mm-hmm. Month two, I have to achieve this. Month three, okay, month four, maybe I had a bad month, but then I can still catch up by doing X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to break it down to bite-sized chunks so that they can see and have that towards strategy and keep focused, you know? And I try to incorporate into their mindset not to beat themselves up if they do have a slip, trip, and bust their lip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always just about picking yourself up, dusting yourself down, and I dislike that word,
sure.
Is just to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, so that famous saying, fall down seven times, get up eight, is what I continue to try to drive into my client's mind to make them see that the process of falling is going to make them stronger in the long run. And that's what I'm trying to install into my clients and into people around me, really. So if people are feeling down, depressed, or sad, I try to make them be aware that in 3 months' time, they may realize why they had to go through what they did, because they've got another obstacle in front of them that the past obstacle is going to help them to get through, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's almost like picking up tools along the way on your journey. So say that in 3 months' time, I get a flat tire. From now to that 3 months, I'm picking up a spanner, I'm picking up a monkey wrench, I'm picking up. So when that 3 months comes, and I've got all the tools in my bag.
And that's this analogy. I've heard you explain this analogy in another podcast.
It's
a financial one.
Yeah.
I liked it.
So I'm just trying to equip my clients with tools. And like you said, really focus on the mindset, because it's not just, I like burgers, so I'm going to eat them and I'm going to sacrifice my health. It's a lot deeper than that. And that's coming from someone who was overweight myself,
right. You
know, and because I know the way my mindset used to be, I can see it in other people.
Yeah, you see, you've got a nice, you can live vicariously because you've been there. And there's a lot of people that have got into fitness because they're coming from that background.
Yes.
Like being unhealthy, or they lived an unhappy lifestyle, or they were overweight.
Yeah.
That's it, putting yourself, or being, having been in their shoes, you can do that.
Yeah.
I like that analogy of kind of, my colleague Altes, he talks about arming yourself to be able to conquer your saboteurs.
Yes. Yes, yeah, I like that.
The tools, you both use the word tools.
Yeah.
We have to sometimes explain that perhaps they haven't got the tools yet to be able to deal with that. And so we've got to try to help them. And it doesn't matter how fantastic your program is.
Yes.
And for that reason, sometimes, I'll be honest, I will cringe with regards to what I do see on social media. And your social media is fantastic, by the way.
Thank you.
Seeing that, it's cringeworthy, because there is a lot of trainers, bless them, who would like to do what you're doing, and they are centered around how great they look rather than how great they can help their clients feel or look, whatever. And it's a shame. It's a massive shame, because what could be more beneficial is to just kind of display how they've helped that person or this person. And if they haven't got clients, because one argument could be, because we always find an argument, is that they haven't got those clients.
Yeah.
Well, then they could say how they could do it, or how they would do it, or how they think that they can do it.
Yeah.
As opposed to just say, look at my biceps curls.
Which
is, you know, has its
fine
space.
People
want to see how you do a bicep curl.
And some people like, and get motivated by
exactly. So that is not an attack on anybody, because there are some great trainers out there. But I do think that, you know, I think that where the real value is, is in trying to influence positively behavior.
Yes.
No matter how fantastic your programs are, if you can't get them to attend, or if you can't encourage them to attend or do anything else, such as keep their food diary or supplement the sessions that you're doing with them, or have that difficult discussion with husband, a daughter, or whatever, that mean that they're now part of your support network. So when you decide you're going for your swim, they say, yeah, no problem. And they have, whatever that is, I think the real value has got to be in having an impact and an influence on behavior.
Definitely. And I think what we do, I think sometimes it means you have to have difficult conversations, which I think that if our clients know where our heart's coming from, they don't take it personally. And I always try to tell them to separate ego, pride, and don't attach what I'm saying to their personal worth. So if I say something like, look, you know what, that person in your life, they're helping you self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. So you need to really start to look at the people you have around you. And sometimes it can be uncomfortable, because sometimes it could be a partner, it could be their ride or die, you know.
And then they come back and say, well, we just got a divorce.
But so sometimes you have to have those difficult conversations, but most of my clients, or all of my clients, know that I'm coming from a place of love and genuine concern, and I genuinely want to help them. And it's challenging sometimes, but I'm the type of person that I got a big mouth. I can't keep it quiet, and I'm thinking something, you see it in my face, and I have to kind of express what I'm feeling, but I will always do it tactfully and never, like I say, never coming from a place of ego.
Mm.
You know, and I think that's one of my strong qualities, is that I'm able to, you know, look at situations from a bird's eye point of view and help other people see things from a bird's eye point of view, as well as putting myself in their shoes and seeing it from their peripheral.
I think your clients, I mean, I couldn't imagine your clients wouldn't see that. They, you know, that's definitely how you, you know.
Yeah.
You know, since we've known each other, it's definitely how you come across. And then, and I'm sure in many situations, people kind of go away at the time and maybe come back and then say, do you know what, Richard's got a really good.
Yes.
Really good.
Yeah.
And they might not even say it. Some of them might, it doesn't need to be said. Some of them may just start to behave in a way. And that might just be coming on time for 5 weeks, because the reason why they're late is because it's a habit, and then they might go back to their old ways, but then you might have to have that discussion.
So, one thing I want to ask you is, what is there a moment that you're quite thinking, oh, I'm quite proud of that moment? Is there any achievements that you've done that you think?
Oh, man. I think I mentioned it already. Just picking my daughter up on time, I'm quite proud of that. I've never been late to pick her up after school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that's not related to, well, it kind of is, because they're my motivation, but, you know, my older daughter, every day, we're fortunate to be able to, you know, design our timetable. Not always at the beginning, you just take the work.
And, yeah.
Just because you kind of, you at the time, you just want the experience. You don't want to upset.
Yeah.
And that changes over time. You sort of think, no, actually, especially when you've got children and so on. And I think, I mean, my oldest daughter now is 10, and to be able to pick her up after school and be on time, I'm proud of that, man.
Yeah,
you know, so I mean, my oldest daughter is from a previous relationship, so there's things that I need to do to be able to orchestrate that. And if I'm not picking her up, I'm picking my other daughter up. So every day I pick them up from nursery and school, and I look forward to that. So that's why I'm really proud of always being able to do that, as it were. And there's things in place that. So yeah, that's. I mean, outside of that. Achieving my GCSEs. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
And they weren't great GCSEs, so I'm really proud, because I had to work super hard
for them. Yeah,
I got 8 Cs. You know, you want to think that it takes a special kind of type to, you know, to run a business or whatever. And even still, I'm kind of almost not shy, but feel like awkward using the term business. I don't feel like I'm doing business.
Yeah, yeah. Same here.
I don't feel like I'm doing business. I feel like what we're doing is moving goalposts. And I say we because I'm very, very lucky to have some good colleagues. Grace, David, little shout out to Joe, been with me for a long time, and Tess, and there's some newer guys coming, and many that have worked with before. But I think in terms of moments, see, I worked as a school teacher as well for 4 years during that 22 years. And like yourself, various roles and jobs have, some of the skills are transposed. And
sure,
it's the same for many people. They may now be a lawyer, but they were once a postman.
Yes.
Or person.
Yes.
Woman.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, post
person.
What is the
post person, I think.
Yeah. And I'm sure they'd suggest that, you know, maybe some people would say that particular job is exactly not, you know, very unhelpful, because now I want to be more calm, or I want to be, it's no good being quiet because I now need to be loud. So even though it might not have been exact in terms of the skills that you use, they can always be useful. And so I worked as a school teacher. That was my, that was an ambition that I had when I was young. And fitness was about getting into teaching because you needed the degree and the teacher qualification, which I went ahead and got whilst I was doing circuits and gym instruction at the time, a bit of personal training. And when the teaching didn't work out for me, I came back to my initial love, but then I was glad because I had this kind of professional experience. In order then to kind of use all of that together, I look back and I think in terms of being proud, just how hard I worked for 8 C grades and 1 A star, you know, and I just think, God, man, you know, at the time, so much work went into that just to get a C. And I opened my, I remember looking at it and I said, God, you know, I felt so proud of, and there were people that were crying because they got a B or they got A and they should have got A star. I was excited.
Yeah.
So I remember that. Then going back into, you know, fitness very, very quickly, I was ready. I thought I was ready to find a space. And so, signing a contract for setting up my first gym, stroke studio, in 2013. I think it was 2013 when I launched Fit Fun Active. Really? That was a proud moment as well.
Yeah. That's amazing. I think one of my...
That's what your listeners want to hear.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant, man. One of my proud moments was having the guts to leave my previous job because I used to be an estate agent. I used to work for a company in Islington and it was... My biggest joy was being able to hand in my notice and have the guts to leap from being stuck in an office, you know, behind a computer to actually... being able to give real value to different people and help them to get to be the best version of themselves. So on the day when I was gonna hand in my notice, I was, you know, having second thoughts, thinking, no, this is a regular income and yada yada yada. So I spoke to my boss and he was like, oh, it's a tough time to be, you know, going working on your own. It's, you know, the climate and this, that. Right. And so I asked him one simple question. So would you work for somebody? And he said, oh, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. And then that was just the kind of the catalyst for me just to say, you know what, here's my notice. And,
but at least he was honest.
Yeah. And I've never looked back.
Because my I worked in two schools and I had a great time. And I still look back at that experience and say that it was where I grew up, if you like.
Yeah.
Which is odd because I was responsible for people helping them, stay, you know, be a model to kind of grow up because they're young. But that's where I did my years of growing up. In my second school, when the workload was literally killing me, what I wanted to do was teach. I loved the teaching. I didn't love being a teacher.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the teaching. It wasn't the children. I love the children. I still see children now in my short 4-year career. And in fact, tell you a funny story. Just when a couple of weeks before you came in down to the gym, Richard, there was a guy that came in. And I don't know if I told you when we were talking recently, he came in. He said, I knew it was you. So I looked, I thought, oh no, who's this now? Because what's that? Because I don't know who I am. And he said, Mr. Gray. I was like, oh, okay, he's a student.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and in such a short career, I've had so many little moments like
that. And I think,
what would happen if I did 10 years? You just have these little moments. And we spoke. And as it happens, he's in the fitness industry now. So, But anyway, the point I was making is that, you know, in the second school where it didn't work out, I remember going to the deputy head in this school. We had a good relationship and I never forget what she said, just like what your manager said. I told her that, you know, it's really, really demanding and, you know, I'm coming in at 6. She said 6. I said, yeah, I'm coming in at 6. I'm going home at 6. I said, what are you doing? Anyway, coming towards the end, and she said to me, she said, you know what? She looked at me and said, go home. Because if you drop down tomorrow, they're just going to replace you. That was the deputy head.
Wow.
That was the kid. I knew that at that moment in time, that was such a poignant moment. I knew at that moment in time, she was talking to me.
Not the cog.
Right. Because I know full well that if that were another colleague of hers, it would have been a different communication.
Mm.
And then that was the beginning of looking into communication, because it was that poignant, and because it resonated immediately. And I remember started looking at even closer stages of readiness. Was I ready to be a teacher? And then let that, you know, and so on. And in more recent time, I've come across another model which my wife introduced me to. In fact, it's actually her mum, but it's called the DISC model of personality.
Okay.
Yeah, have you not?
No.
I mean, I hope this is interesting but you see, the thing is that for a long time, and you could probably relate to this, for a long time, I'd heard things such as do unto others as you expect them to do unto you.
Yeah, right?
It's quite a good kind of philosophy to uphold. In the same way, you know, talk to people how you expect them to talk to you.
Yeah.
That, and you go up with that, and you know, my grandma is Christian, and you know, she'd take us to church, and my mum would kind of learn from my grandma, and then we learn from, and so I grew up for a long time understanding that. And that moment, I think back to when my deputy head teacher said to me, "Go home." I knew she was talking to me,
because
I never heard her speak in that manner.
Yeah,
and I looked up to her. That's why I went to her, And it takes me back to that time then, when I came across this model of behavior, the DISC model of personality or DISC model of behavior. It made me start to take on board that wasn't necessarily correct, the idea that you should speak to people how you expect to be spoken to. And once I got that, Richard, once I took that from the model, it really revolutionized the way I started to communicate. Now, I'm not saying that I would just come in and just, you know, effing and blinding. That's not. But what I'm talking about is how. Because I like people to be direct to me. Just tell me. You've got something on your face, done.
Yeah.
Whereas
others
might go, did you realize that you might... and then someone else might go, you know, we communicate a different way.
Yeah.
But I want people to just be direct with me, but that's what I want. Yeah. And so this idea that you should just
speak to someone
that might not be right. Imagine I'm just talking to all my clients. So can you imagine somebody comes in for the first time and they say, I want to do 4 sessions a week. Can you sort of say, that ain't going to work. That's what they want to do.
Yeah.
So it might be that the way in which you get them to tick, you need to perhaps deliver that message in a different manner. And when I understood this model, because what it does is it's a quadrant which puts you into 4 categories. And anytime you start talking about categories, people do get a little bit defensive because you can't categorize. But for the sake of trying to understand what makes us do what we do or why people behave the way they do, it's worth looking at.
Yeah. So what's it called again, sorry?
It's called the DISC model of personality.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, you can talk about A and B personalities, and I mentioned earlier the transdirectal model for behavior change, which we know more familiar as the stage of readiness with health and fitness. This is to do with and there's loads and loads of theory and books on it, and I've just finished reading a book which is a fantastic book. This book is How to Build Rapport Instantly. Or How to Build Rapport Quickly by Beverly Keppel.
Okay.
And there's another one called Surrounded by Idiots. It's not a great title, but Surrounded by Idiots. And then it goes on in brackets, Understanding Those That Can't Be Understood.
Brilliant.
Right? Because the idea behind the book is, you know, when we perceive somebody, what's the matter with them? We can't quite get why they do that, why they do this. When we can start with ourselves, it's not the fact that they can't be understood. It's just that we don't understand the way in which perhaps they're wired. And that when we can step back and start to see things how they see them, then it can help to kind of come up with a way of communicating that might reach them. Do you know, at the time that I discovered this model, I was in a team of three, and as I was looking at it, the team multiplied to 13.
Wow.
We haven't, that was about 3 years ago, and I know, no, 4 years, because my daughter's now just turned four. And I know that because at the time when she was born, I promised to take a year whereby her first year, or at least a year before she starts nursing full time, we're going to spend that time, and I'm going to give to what is the most important
thing,
and that was spending time with her. And so she was going nursing part time. And after my wife's maternity, I then had a kind of extended paternity, and would do that. And what gave me the opportunity to do that, not comfortably, but gave me the opportunity to do that, I'm very fortunate and grateful, because I had some great colleagues at the time. But we were in a team of three, and then I discovered, was able to communicate with, and then the team multiplied to 13 at its peak. We're currently seven, but at its peak, 13. And I genuinely believe that that had something to do with it. I just believe that conversations, the first meetings that we were having with whomever was interested in delivering sessions at the gym, was based around communicating, not how I, because I could say, right, if you're going to work here, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
If you're going to build a clientele, be on time, communicate with your client. That's how I like to be spoken to.
Yes.
It might not come, but that's how I like to be spoken to. Now I think I've understood it, and I don't claim to never have arguments and know exactly. But look, you know, I do have clients that come from 15 miles away and have done so for over 10 years, you know, and there's a few of them, so.
Yeah. No, brilliant, man. Okay, we're kind of coming to the end of the podcast now. So a couple of things, two quick things. What advice would you give to any listeners who are struggling with their fitness or health goals, or any advice you would give them to kind of keep focused on what they want to do? Coming up to 2022, January's coming, you know what it is for our industry in this type of year. So yeah, any little tips of advice you could give to anyone who is going to embark on a change in lifestyle?
Look, it's only because I feel strongly about it. I'd say take some adequate time. I don't know what that means exactly. Could mean more for some. Let's take some adequate time to look at some of the psychosocial influences on behavior change. They obviously want to change something. It might be being inactive to active. It might be being healthy, or from unhealthy to healthy, or just getting fitter, whatever that is. Take some time to look at the psychosocial influences on changing the desired behavior.
Perfect, perfect. And lastly, is there anything that you'd like to say to listeners? Anything you'd like to plug the gym, anything?
Plug, I don't know if they would at all be interested, but you know, if you want to check out
Fit Fun Active,
you can happily do so. I don't know if you'd be happy after, but if you'd like to, you can have a look at fitfunactive.co.uk. You can find us on Instagram. We don't have thousands of followers because we've been working on the interior first.
Yes.
We believe the firmest faith is in fewest words. So there's a kind of a juxtapositioning within social media and our morals. But having said that, we understand the value of the platform.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Few thousand followers would be great, but
cool.
So that's Fit Fun Active, or Fit Fun _ Active.
Brilliant. And also, I teach class, or I will be resuming classes back in January for the January reset. So if you do need any assistance in getting to that next stage, you're going from couch to wherever it is you want to get to, 9 a.m. Saturday mornings at Fit Fun Active.
Thank you very much.
So yeah, pop along. So yeah, bro, absolutely a pleasure coming down. And guys, I hope you enjoyed that podcast, and catch you on the other side. Peace.